We said, let's get it down to Valdez or somewhere around there. But, oh, by the way, we have to deal with these Alaska Natives. They got a Land Claims Act out there. Well, we can deal with them. There was a lot of push to deal with the Alaska Natives because of the oil was out there. No, by the way, we had a pipeline that we bought. The oil companies bought and piled up on the beaches of Alaska. But they couldn't start building those pipelines. They couldn't start building the pipeline to get to the oil because of the Land Claims Act that was still pending. There was a big push then. We all know what the push is. We're right up to it today. We all know what happens. We waited here. We worked all day on a bill. We tried to get it to this floor. And we had to go back and fix it again. Waited another 3 hours. Because we didn't take the time. So there was promises made back in 1968, 1970, somewhere around there. But in 1971, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was passed. Our people from this state of Alaska was back there. The governor, the legislators. Our congressional delegation was back there, representing the U.S. government. The people from the AFN were back there negotiating. They were all part of this. There was three things that was being negotiated in the Settlement Act that was passed in 1971. Three things that that our people wanted: land, money, and subsistence. In the Senate bill, subsistence was written all throughout the bill. In the House version, there was nothing in the subsistence bill. It talked about subsistence. Then we went to the conference. From that conference that was passed, they told us, don't worry. We're getting that push again. Don't worry, we can't get it into the House, Bill. Don't worry, we can't get it in there. But we'll write it in this conference report that the Secretary of Interior and the state of Alaska shall, strong language, take care of the subsistence needs of the Alaska Natives. Didn't say that it might or they might take care of it. They said we will. I promise you, we will take care of it. It never was taken care of, for whatever reason. But it was a promise made. I went back and talked to several people back in Washington, D.C. about this promise that was made. They verified my promise. They verified what I'm saying today. Senator Stevens, Senator Murkowski, Bill Horn, who was Assistant Interior Secretary at the time of the passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. So what happened during the time between 1971 and 1980? The Alaska Natives went back and says, are you going to keep your word? Are you going to keep your promise? They didn't do it. So they went back and we couldn't get any assurances from the state or the federal government that they were going to do that. So the people in AFN worked very hard to get ANILCA amended. When I first started here, I was listening to the subsistence issue, I thought, my God, I'm listening to all the Native people talk about how it is with them, and I'm listening to people such as Representative from 22 saying we're all created equal and ANILCA is just making us do that. I couldn't understand that because, you know, I agree that we should not discriminate. I feel it. I feel it every day. I felt it while I was growing up. So I don't want that. I don't like it. I don't think we should have it. But where did this subsistence come from? I went and investigated, and that's what I found out. The conference report, the promises that were made. So we got this put in the NILCA. And it was said last night that AFN asked that we take out the word Alaska Natives, that it's only good for Alaska Natives. AFN did not. The state of Alaska did. Governor Hammond went back to Washington, D.C. and said, because of the state constitution that says we have an equal rights protection, cannot discriminate, we have to make it rural. So the Alaska Native says, okay, so we get the subsistence out there, we'll do it, we'll live with that. So here we are again. We said in the Resource Committee that the AFN has never compromised. I believe in my heart we have been compromising. That they have been compromising. In the Resource Committee, I asked, tell me, we have a problem here. Tell me why we can't, tell me where I'm wrong about this promise that was made. And I'll go away. The representative that just spoke before me came close to telling me. I disagree with her, but she talked about it. She's telling me I'm wrong. That's fine. I disagree with it, and I won't debate it, but I haven't heard it from the resource chairman from District 27 at that time, said that we will debate it at another time. I want to hear it. I want to hear why we can't live up to the promise that was made. A deal's a deal. You guys heard that several times before. I wish we could talk about this so that we don't start pointing fingers at each other. It's terrible when I hear us talk about discrimination like we have been. When I think what we have before us is an agreement, a contract, a treaty, whatever you want to call it, a promise. I want to understand where it is. I think if we can get by that, then if I could hear you, maybe I'm not hearing you. Maybe I'm turned you off, like I mentioned one time before in caucus. There are times I do. Tonight, I'm trying to listen. I would hope that we can talk about this promise that has been made, this deal that has been made. I was asked to say, all I want is it for the language to be said that it should be Alaska Natives first. I'll tell you how I feel about that. I would like, if that would take care of the problem, I think it would be good. But that isn't what I want. I want the management of this state to be here, and the only way around it is for us to live up to ANILCA. Management has been said by several people around here in this, by several members of this body, that we will not have control over the land, over the water, even if we comply with ANILCA. Well, I could tell you one thing. Nobody can keep me out of federal court. We will have federal oversight no matter what. You cannot keep me out of federal court. I, as an individual. And if I'm wrong there, please tell me I'm wrong. I think it's very important that we get management back. The management. You know, in the private sector, when you manage a company, you darn near own it. You have control over that company. You have oversight, the owners of it, but you have a lot of control. You can make it do whatever you want it to do. I think it's very important that we keep the management in the state of Alaska. We talk about locking up Alaska. I've seen it happen in my community. I've seen it happen in the timber sales that were going on in southeast Alaska. The environmental groups were using the subsistence issue as a tool to stop the timber industry from logging. You think that we have a very strong congressional delegation, which we do. I'm proud of them. I respect them. I think they're the best that we've ever had in many years. Ketchikan Pulp Company was shut down because it couldn't get any more timber because of the strong environmental movement back in Washington, D.C. We have strong leadership back there. This subsistence issue will be used as a tool to lock up the state of Alaska. Fairbanks is going great guns in extracting the minerals. The North Slope is going fairly well today. But I could tell you some of the things that how they could use this. If it's affecting the subsistence lifestyle of the rural communities, any type of resource management, extraction, or whatever it is, they're gonna go back and lobby the people in Washington, D.C. to lock up the state of Alaska. Then we're going to sit here and we're going to say, I upheld the state constitution. There might be only 40 of us in the state. Nothing to work with, but we held the state constitution up. I urge you to vote yes on this constitutional amendment. I would ask, when you start talking about equal rights, or answer my question about the promise that has been made to us, I would hope that you cover that base before you start pointing our fingers. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Williams. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I do not believe it was the co-chairman of Resources that said they would be able to discuss or debate this question with the representative from Sitka and other areas, or excuse me, from Ketchikan and Saxman and other areas around there. And having said that, I do not wish to take anything out of context, so therefore I ask to read short passage from the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act. And I must admit to you that I'm not seeing as well these days as I normally do, so let me hold this up here where I can see it correctly. Congress, this is Declaration of Policy. Section 2. Congress finds and declares that there is an immediate need for a fair and just settlement of claims by Native and Native groups of Alaska based on Aboriginal land claims. The settlement should be accomplished rapidly with certainty in conformity with the real economic and social needs of Natives, without litigation, without maximum participation by Natives in decisions affecting their rights and property, without establishing any permanent racially defined institutions, rights, privileges, or obligations, without creating a reservation system or a lengthy wardship or trusteeship, and without adding to the categories of property and institutions enjoying special tax privileges or to the legislation establishing special relationships between the United States government and the state of Alaska. And then it goes on to say that what it goes on to say, and I'll have to find it again here, paraphrasing, I don't like to do that, something that's important, that all Aboriginal rights to land, to water, to title are hereby extinguished, and in exchange for whether it all had been their land to begin with or not, 44 million acres of land and almost $1 billion. That's what the law said. Now, a conference committee report that is not part of a law has no basis in law. And Mr. Speaker, this law is what says that all these special claims were extinguished. Now, I want to see the people all over this state treated fair and equally and without prejudice or bias. And I will continue to work in that vein. And if the representative from Saxman wishes to read this book, I'd be glad to lend it to him, although I did get it out of the majority leader's office. Thank you.
Thank you for that admission. Further debate? Ready for the Representative Hogan?
Mr. Speaker, surely you don't think we're going to vote without me talking on this. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to maybe expand a little bit. With all due respect to my friend from our senior member of the this body, I think the language, and I couldn't find it either, but I have it pretty memorized. Claims to lands based on use and occupancy, i.e. Indian country, which has been litigated to the U.S. Supreme Court, and any claims to Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights are hereby extinguished in exchange for 44 million acres of land. It was 22 million acres on the floor of the U.S. Senate. I believe Ted Kennedy amended it to 44 million acres, and I believe the record will reflect that it was for the specific purpose of providing for subsistence for Alaskan Natives. Now, essentially, Alaskan Native, and that's fee simple land. Fee simple means, as most of us know, or we all know, they own the subsurface rights as well. Now, the rest of us don't own subsurface rights, and the state does. That's why we get our permit fund dividends, because it's our share of the royalty off the oil developed that the state owns. Now, in addition to the timber and the minerals, essentially, I respect and I understand that land belongs to the natives. I mean, that's their land, and I can't trespass on it without their permission. I'm painfully aware of it because I look out my window and across the canyon from my house is right on the edge of a canyon. I look across the canyon and I see my Chickaloon neighbor's land, and if I step across that, I'm trespassing. In fact, I have to buy a permit to go on their land, and I respect that. I don't go on their land unless I buy the permit. There's essentially natives own, if they selected their lands for subsistence, about 12% of the state of Alaska for a private hunting preserve if they wish. That's pretty good. 44 million acres. You know, I don't know how many Alaska natives there are in the state, but if we took the amount of Alaska natives and figured out how many acres per native, that'd be an interesting figure. Now, admittedly, some people pick their land for timber, and other people pick their land for oil, and you know the fish and the game aren't always there when you want, all that other stuff. But in response to my good friend from Ketchikan, one of the things he said, he talked about the conference committee report, and I agree with the member from Anchorage that said that it doesn't have the force of law, but yes, there was a commitment made to protect subsistence for all natives. Rural priority does not do that. It doesn't, simply doesn't do it. You know, my co-chairman or former co-chairman, I guess we haven't had a committee on committee yet, so we're still co-chairmen, I guess, technically, of the Resources Committee, is married to a Nome Eskimo. And he has children that are Native. Alaskan Natives. I'm married to a Native Alaskan, and my children are Native Alaskans. Or is it the other way around? It's late. But the point is that what the spirit of that conference committee report that I've heard my good friend heartfeltly talk about so much, what about my friend from Anchorage's wife? What about my friend from Willow and her son? You know, and, you know, I guess it just really grieves my heart that we're here now and we're not going to get a permanent solution. You guys, you got the votes, okay? Got the votes, you vote. You don't, you talk. One of the fun things about being a minority, I guess. I'm talking. But it's going to run it down something that's objectionable to me down my throat. The people that think like me down my throat. And it's not going to solve the problem in the long run. We will be back here at some time. It's not going to solve the hurt that I see in the committee hearing process. You were real aggravated with me for having long periods of hearings. But doggone it, these people flew to Juneau. They spent a lot of money, and I thought they needed to have their say. And I don't even want to sound like Bill Clinton, but I do feel it, okay? I'm not going to go quite that far quoting Bill Clinton, but I do feel that. I feel the hurt. You know, I talked about the heart wound. You know, I believe what is happening in Alaska right now, this is what happens when a heart wound has festered for 10 years. You know, the heart of Alaska is being ripped. If anybody and we're going to put sutures on it. We're going to. It's been pierced. It's been punctured. Now, puncture wound isn't very big. I was watching TV in my office. Now that I'm in the minority, I have a little bit more time on my hands. And I was watching TV in the office, and there was one of these ER shows. I kind of like that stuff. Blood and gore doesn't bother me because I've cut open so many critters. And actually watched my wife have C-sections and stuff. And I'm in there going, oh, what are you doing now? You know, but anyway, you know, puncture wound, and you're a police chief. You've seen a lot of puncture wounds. You've seen, I'm sure, stab wounds, shot people being shot, and they're probably not pleasant memories. But they aren't very big. They don't, you know, there's a little hole here, right here, a little blood, you know, maybe a little blood running out. But the internal injury is massive. And, you know, in the Civil War, more people died from the infection from getting shot than the bullet. Because they used to take spit. They'd pound that powder down in there, and they'd take some spit, and they'd take a little cloth, and they'd get that cloth wet and ram that cloth in there before they put the ball in. And the bacteria on that cloth got on the ball, and the ball went in, punctured the guy, and they didn't have antibiotics then. That's what's going on here. There's a puncture wound that's infected. We're going to put some sutures on it, and it's going to show up somewhere else later on. We're not curing the problem. And I'll tell you what, if this cured the problem, I'd vote for it, but it doesn't. My friend from Anchorage talked about, he stole part of my speech. I like quoting the Declaration of Independence. I've got it pretty, the first part, I've got it pretty much memorized. He stopped at one of my favorite parts, thank you. I wonder if that was by coincidence. Endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, amongst those, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Endowed by their Creator with unalienable right. Equal protection is an unalienable right. It's a foundation of our Constitution. And I know we're here because we have to be. But the problem is the federal law. It's flawed. Look what it's done to the Alaska people. Look what it's done, Mr. Speaker. I mean, we are here. You know, I'm glad most of you in this room, or really, I think all of you, are big enough to handle this debate. You know, and I really admire how we can sit down and have lunch and, you know, we can get at each other. I mean, and tempers flare sometimes, but you know what? You guys are my friends. But, you know, a lot of these people that are out in the bush are, you know, they can't necessarily, they aren't in this kind of arena. They just feel this heart, they feel this really in their hearts. And I'm telling you, somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to get hurt. And it's just going to get worse. And this doesn't solve it. I wish it did. You know, why can't we just, all due respect to my lawyer friends, I like to play lawyer, let's sit down as neighbors and friends and get the lawyers and the cameras out of the room. I mean, I've done that with a few of my friends in here that are on the opposite side of this issue. We'd go out in my boat, I'd drag down here, and we'd go fishing. And doggone it, one time I thought we had it solved. We're all going, yeah, yeah, that works. You know, it came back and the lawyers got involved in it. You know, why can't we just do that? Three reasons why. You know, we got to go check with the secretary. Well, if he wants to get this solved, why isn't he here? Why didn't he have somebody in these meetings saying, you know, no, we got to go run check with the secretary. Well, I hope he's out of office in a year and a half and we have somebody that might be a little bit more reasonable. But by then, if this passes, we're done. So, you know, a lot of you guys don't like my tactics. I respect that. But I have to do what I have to do because I believe that when your Creator looks at us, He doesn't see what color your skin is. He doesn't see anything but your heart. And we're all equal in the eyes of our Creator, whoever our Creator is for us. And that's an unalienable right. And we're turning our backs on that in the name of political expediency to capitulate to a flawed federal law that has divided our state for over a decade.
Thank you, Representative Bogan. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I don't believe that this is about discrimination on the basis of the color of the skin. I think this is about essentially, as the speaker from Saxman said so eloquently, a contract, a treaty, a promise. And people quoted the findings and the some of the law from 1971. There was a little water under the bridge, and we find ourselves at 1980. And Congress felt it necessary, let me repeat that, Congress felt it necessary to revisit the issue. And Mr. Speaker, with your permission, I'd like to read two short passages from the findings of ANILCA, Section 801. The first is the first section, the first finding. Congress finds and declares that the continuation of the opportunity for subsistence uses by rural residents of Alaska, including both natives and non-natives, on the public lands, and by Alaska Natives on native land, is essential to native physical, economic, traditional, and cultural existence, and to non-native physical, economic, traditional, and social existence. That was the first finding. I'd like to go down to number four now. In order to fulfill the policies and purposes of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and as a matter of equity, let me repeat that last phrase, and as a matter of equity, it is necessary for the Congress to invoke its constitutional authority over Native affairs and its constitutional authority under the Property Clause and the Commerce Clause to protect and provide the opportunity for continued subsistence uses on the public lands by Native and non-Native rural residents. Now, I tried to emphasize in the reading of that that the purpose of this act, the findings of Congress in putting ANILCA together, tried to deal with two separate issues and tried to merge them into one. And that was a native land claim situation and rural Alaskans' need for subsistence. And it dealt with both native and non-native and mixed them together. It worked both from its authority over native affairs and under the Commerce Clause and other authority. It was a congressional decision. The Secretary of Interior didn't pass this law. Congress passed this law. The Secretary of Interior doesn't arbitrarily find himself in a position that he makes this determination. It is by act of law that he's in that position. That is, Congress put him in that position. And in fact, the way that law will work is if he does nothing, then the takeover happens. The regulations are already in place. So to vent your frustration on the Secretary of Interior is inappropriate. He is only acting as Congress has instructed him to act. And that instruction comes under both Congress's authority over native affairs and Congress's authority over commerce. So I don't believe this is about discrimination. I don't believe that this fundamentally flies in the face of our equal access clause of our Constitution. This passing this proposed amendment, and if it were to be adopted by the people, will not repeal the Equal Access Clause. That clause will remain in the Constitution and will be in full force. It will be balanced with this clause, and in limited circumstances will find some effect. But I ask my colleagues to look at the language that we have tried to draft, undoubtedly not perfect. But this language, I believe, allows a solution that doesn't have the kinds of discriminatory effects that some of you think it has. And I offer as one possible example of that House Bill 30, which I believe could be enacted under the terms of this.
State your point.
My good friend and colleague from the Fairbanks area is debating another bill.
No, I'm not.
He mentioned it by name.
Please continue.
Mr. Speaker, I only mention that to point out as one example among, I'm sure, many other possibilities of ways in which statutes could be enacted under the terms of this amendment that's before us tonight, this proposed language, that can accomplish, I believe, a solution to this problem that is, in my view, an Alaskan solution that treats Alaskans fairly and satisfies the contractual treaty promises that were made and which were reinforced in the findings of ANILCA that I read to begin with. So I think that we are not foisting some sham on the people of Alaska. I don't think this is a day that we should be dimming the lights. Quite the opposite. I think that we have worked hard to find a solution to a very difficult problem. I think this is an appropriate solution, and I urge all members to support it. Thank you.
Representative Davies. Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll associate my remarks with the prior speaker, and that I too don't feel like we should be dimming the lights. I believe we are giving ourselves an opportunity. And a lot of what has occurred over a long period of time to where we are today has to do with time and timing. From the conversations that I've heard in the last few days, many of the people who were at this issue years ago were not on the same side of the issue. Many of the interest groups who are roaming this building today were at each other's throat. Time and timing, Mr. Speaker. A lot of those people who were in disagreement understand the situation that we are faced with and have worked through differences and have strived to work with members in the committees of this body to look for a workable solution. I think that spells opportunity. You know, we've heard it said on public lands that we don't have management of our game. And I think that with 27 votes out of this body and 14 votes out of the other body, we will be managing game and fish in all of Alaska. Yes, under federal oversight. But we will be managing the game and writing those statutes. That's an opportunity. So I think, finally, that we have heard many discussions about finding an Alaskan solution. Mr. Speaker, an Alaskan solution, if this legislature is able to put out a constitutional amendment, will be put forth at the polls when the people speak. That, Mr. Speaker, will be an Alaskan solution.
Thank you, Representative Jewell. Representative James, brief at ease. Any further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body. Shall committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 202, Finance Amended? Pass the House. Members may proceed to vote. Will the clerk please lock the roll? Any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
28 yeas, 12 nays.
And so, committee substitute for HGR 202, Finance Amendment, has passed the House in third reading. Brief at ease. House, please come back to order. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
There are citations on today's calendar.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. Brings us to unfinished business. Are there any items of unfinished business? Seeing none, are there any committee announcements? Are there any other announcements? Any special orders? Mr. Majority.
On congratulations.
Representative Ogun.
On congratulations.
Without objection.
Mr. Speaker, congratulations. You kept your promise. I'm not sure who you made it to. You said you promised you'd move this bill. I think I'd like to know who that is, but... I think it's kind of ironic that I played the role of Minority Leader in this debate. Now, my short tenure here, 5 years, I've never seen anything like it. It seems kind of odd to have the majority Minority Leader, I guess we'll call him, I don't know how we're going to define all this, but not jumping up. And it's a tough job. You do a good job at it. It's not as easy as I thought. I kind of jumped up and interrupted a debate of a friend of mine. Apologize to Representative from Willow, but congratulations. It's, you know, I don't think there's a sense of joy in here in this room right now, because I think we all know in our hearts that this isn't over. Thank you.
Any other special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment to call the House.
Mr. Speaker. We stand in adjournment until the call of the Speaker.